Siren Radio.
Wondrous indeed. Cathy Manso, welcome back to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Yesterday, of course, you were still in the midst of celebrating the fact that you now graduated a second time, the first time from the University of Lincoln, postgraduate, of course, Masters in War and...
International human rights.
Exactly. And the world needs more international human rights specialists. So congratulations on that. And I saw the speech that you actually gave. It was truly wondrous. I would encourage any film critic to actually access the University of Lincoln YouTube channel and catch up with your particular session. I'm sure if you like tributes, if you like pageantry, if you like all the great things that actually make Lincoln the true capital of the world, you could go no further. Isn't that right, Richard Fitzwilliams?
Alex, how could I disagree with a single word you said?
Yeah, the moon must be out of phase with you. Now, I know what's happened. We've switched into the multiverse because how wonderful it is to see that everything, everywhere, all at once, my personal favourite movie, because it's all happening all at the same time and you're switching into so many aspects and so on, simply through chewing gum, and you've got Jamie Lee Curtis battling with Michelle Yeoh and all sorts of other areas, etc. Surely if there's any justice in the cosmos, that will win, that will sweep the board for both BAFTAs and Academy Awards. I suspect Richard Fitzwilliams might not agree.
Well, I think it's a very fair point that, I mean, there's no doubt with 11 nominations, nominations aren't necessarily a sign of the success a movie will have, but it has 11 nominations at the Oscars. It's done very well at the BAFTAs, in the top five for Best Picture there. I have to say, quite honestly, I mean, I couldn't understand it. I totally...
Richard, all you need is some experience of cosmology and multiphasic dimensions, and it'll be a cinch, literally. There's nothing more that you actually need to understand that. The fact that every turn, even the decision you've made today to press the button to access via Zoom this particular Midweek Drive Morning Edition in another alternate reality, you've done completely the different thing. You've ignored us completely. And in another reality, you are indeed married to Meghan Markle.
Putting it mildly, you've given a very good illustration of why I personally did not like and could not follow the movie. Mm. It was rather refreshing seeing the BBC broadcast of it. Jason Sullivan's a film critic with Jane Hill, who's also interested in films, the presenter. Neither could understand it either, but yeah. It was admitted, and you could hear with the cheers, that it has a huge... We discussed this actually very, very briefly before. There's no doubt that there is a particularly committed set of people that are expecting and hoping and certainly doing everything they possibly can to ensuring that it wins at the Oscars. Now, no sci-fi movie's ever won at the Oscars. And
well, arguably, Black Panther is science fiction-oriented. I think that...
It didn't win.
No, well, but it won more awards than most science fiction movies actually won with respect to...
But you've never had a Best Picture one. I mean, this is... It's one of the reasons people often complain about the Oscars is obviously not every actor who should have won one, Peter O'Toole, a very good example, I mean, necessarily did, and obviously the same applies to different films in different years. But I mean, there is no doubt my hopes are centered very much on All Quiet on the Western Front, which is a brilliant anti-war movie. Of course, Tar is just genius about a monstrous genius played by Cate Blanchett. What is interesting, of course, about the nominations for Best Picture is they do have and this, I think, is very important for the audience, Avatar, The Way of Water, and also you've got Top Gun Maverick, which also made it for in the screenplay category, which is interesting because that rather surprised me. I think that
you've got to reward the finance that Tom Cruise has single-handedly provided the film industry through Top Gun Maverick. And we know that Hollywood likes winners, and that's what they like to actually reward fellow pretenders to actually win that particular thing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt it's not going to win Best Picture, but it definitely, as far as the audience is concerned, I mean, 87 million watched Titanic in 1997. You've had some terrible numbers recently, sort of 12 million, this sort of thing. It pulled back last year. And of course, last year had that slap Yeah, Will Smith has been banned.
What? You mean that slap? Oh, sorry.
Why? Why, Alex?
I'm sick and tired of you calling out my... No, I won't say any further.
Well, I can only say that...
It was paving the way, though, for Meghan and Harry later in the year. I mean, it was almost foreshadowing the joys of Meghan and Harry and Spare, I feel.
And people think I'm crazy when I talk about the Illuminati. I think there's something there.
Mm-hmm. I think there's absolutely no doubt that, for the worst of reasons, it got the Oscars... made the Oscars news, but the point with this is obviously the cinema, as we know, has had a very, very traumatic period, and it isn't over yet. It's very difficult to get audiences to movies. I've noticed they're starting to come back to middle budget movies a little. But having said that, I mean it's very important that Avatar: Way of Water and also Top Gun: Maverick draw them back. And obviously, Elvis did pretty well too. And we were going to have, I think, Austin Butler will pretty well clean up as best actor. Best actress should be.
Have a best actress, Richard. Should just actually be best performer. They should be gender blind, and basically that would ensure that it was an all male lineup, as indeed happened with the Brit Awards.
The Brits. Yes, no, it did. And I mean, this is the reason that I think we should stick with the current system. But I think, as you say, I suspect that we won't. The surprise when it came to best actress was that Danielle Deadweiler didn't get nominated, and will be discussing on Sunday her remarkable performance as Mamie Till, whose son, 14-year-old son, was so brutally lynched in Mississippi. She missed out on an Oscar nomination, which was a surprise. And it's interesting when one looks at these various awards and campaigns for them, because the campaign that has, I mean, I haven't seen the film yet, The Leslie, it's a low budget movie, it's made no money at all, but it starred Andrea Riseborough, and it has had an amazing campaign, including being backed by all sorts of really, really big names. Kate Winslet said this, Kate Blanchett said that, and so on about her performance. And this has worked. It is fascinating to see how a campaign of that sort, and we've got another campaign for Everything Everywhere All at Once.
It's all political, Richard. That's why we give thanks that Donald Trump will be allowed back on Facebook and Instagram to actually give some balance and impartial.
It is not all political, Alex, but no doubt there are deep politics in it. I also mentioned Michelle Yeoh, nominated for Best Actress for Everything Everywhere All at Once.
And deserving actress. It to win, actually.
And no, definitely not over Kate Blanchett. Have you seen Tar?
Look, I'm sorry, Tar is just one version of one reality. Everything Everywhere All at Once is every reality. I mean, surely that has to be the case. Why, Richard, by the way, on a slightly different note, did the Academy fail to nominate a single woman for Best Director? Not a single woman nominated for Best Director.
I mean, that is true. And frankly, in this particular year, I have to say... I mean, on merit, and I'm not sure I'd have put Ruben Östlund in for Triangle of Sadness, but it was overall a successful movie, though I didn't think as successful as it was supposed to be. I was surprised that Edward Berger missed out for All Quiet on the Western Front. You would expect Spielberg for The Fablemans, which we'll be discussing soon, a wonderful film, Martin McDonagh for The Banshees, Todd Field for Tar, and then the two Daniels for Everything Everywhere, that those of the other four. So it happens to be a year where I cannot think of who should have been nominated, given the fact they've only got five. I have to be frank about it.
Sadly, as we said last night, despite the fact that it's going down a storm in Mexico with sellout audiences to every package, Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey is not actually in the running for this year's Academy Awards. Maybe next year. I know, Richard, you'd be pleased to actually see this independent slasher film all about, as its name suggests, effectively a return to the world of A.A. Milne, except Christopher Robin discovers that actually Winnie and Piglet have become psycho killers. in betwixt times. So Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, a movie that I'm just raising for your profile to maybe be considered, you know, after The Fablemans and various other factors. It gets its release in Britain sort of end of February, March time.
I have so many questions.
Yes, it certainly sounds an unusual take on it. I have to say also, All Quiet on the Western Front, if it doesn't win Best Picture, and there is an outside chance it might at the Oscars, and also, I mean, there's an outside chance it might at the BAFTAs. It will or should or must win Best Foreign Film. It was an absolutely remarkable Andy War movie. Really, really powerful.
But it was a remake, Richard. It was a remake of a much better Hollywood version of the 1930s, ultimately.
Have you seen it?
Yes. Again,
you were not impressed.
I preferred the 1930 original. I think I said this. If you go through the podcast, you can listen to me actually uttering exactly those words. You kept quiet about the Banshees of Inisherin. I mean, surely that's definitely a shoe-in for outstanding British film, and arguably, you know, we'll scoop a whole range of awards for its particular import. Much better than obviously Empire of Light or indeed Good Luck to You, Leo Grande.
No, I was just coming to it, actually. I was just coming to outstanding British film, talking about The Irish, which was inevitably coming with the Oscars, because there are five possibles. Brendan Gleeson is one of supporting for The Banshees, Colin Farrell also, and Paul Mescal for After Sun as the father, young father, very good indeed. Also, you've got in the outstanding British film category, what I think is significant is there are 10 at the BAFTAs: After Sun, The Banshees of Inisherin, Byron Charles, Empire of Light, Good Luck to You, Leo Grande, Living, The Matilda, the musical, See How They Run, The Swimmers and The Wonder. I read them because it is a proof of the amazing amount of talent in the British film industry. And I mean, it's great that all of those.
Another false dawn, Richard, let's be honest. You know, we've had so many false dawns ever since Colin Welland actually said the British are coming back in the 1980s.
Yes, I know. Yeah, that has haunted, or at least it keeps being quoted, but that is 40 years ago. And of course, Chariots was 1981, I think. And yes, it wasn't a successful decade for British film, but it's the amount of talent which was really significant. And as for the supports, I think for supporting actress in both cases, I mean, Kay Hugh Kwan for Everything Ever All at Once is winning all the awards.
He's back after Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. That's what we love about that. After all those years of Indy, what are we going to do, Indy? He's back. It's fantastic.
And then Angela Bassett, I think, certain to win for supporting actress for Black Panther, Wakanda Forever.
And not Jamie Lee Curtis for Everything Everywhere All at Once. I mean, her role as a wonderful incarnation of everything you don't want to deal with when you're dealing with the Inland Revenue Service or the internal tax people. You know, surely that beats Angela Bassett's line hands down.
Angela Bassett, that was very good.
You're saying Jamie Lee Curtis wasn't?
No, I'm not saying she wasn't. I'm saying that the film, and I've said this several times, it's just, it wasn't one that I was able to...
If not, then Stephanie Howe, or Sue, I should say, also Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Why are you against Wakanda? Why don't you want... who hurt you?
I just think Marvel's had all its plaudits.
I see. I hear you.
Yeah, you know.
No, I mean, I think it's... with Jimmy Kimmel back as host, it will be a very interesting Oscar race because we don't
Third
know...
Third time for Jimmy.
Third time it is, indeed. And, you know, when it comes to Best Picture, yes, I do think, if I had to bet... Beat the Banshees is still possible, and it's possible Quiet just might. But I would certainly bet on Everything Everywhere at Once because it's new and a very new type of film, and no such movie has won before. And I think that will influence the way they vote. But I hope a more conventional film works. I think for Best Director, there, I wouldn't be at all surprised if we get the two Daniels, Everything Everywhere All at Once, but it might be Martin McDonagh for The Banshees.
Sadly, it won't be Steven Spielberg for Meet the Fablemans, even though he's now tied with Martin Scorsese for most nominations as Best Director.
Fablemans did remarkably badly at the BAFTAs, and he got one nomination,
yeah.
Whereas
See, it's that, it's that anti-American stuff that I find so difficult to deal
so
with.
Difficult.
Really. Exactly. Richard, we're going to talk a bit more about this, and Kathy might have one or two questions as well for your good self, after we've had a little musical break, because it is the Midweek Drive Morning Edition live, and sometimes too much information comes across too soon, so I feel that we'll go back to the 1990s and the theme to a musical. Well, actually, it wasn't a musical. It was a wonderful movie. It was an Academy Award-winning musical.
Academy Award-winning movie,
exactly. I thought it was very good. Tom Hanks, of course, starred in it. Do you know what it is, Richard?
Was this Philadelphia?
Yes.
I was bruised and battered. I couldn't tell what I felt. I was unrecognizable to myself. I saw my reflection in a window and didn't know my own face. Oh brother, are you gonna leave me wasting away on the streets of Philadelphia?
Richard, you have yet to take part in what we call Kathy's cryptic crossword clue, and you're a very learned individual, very scholarly, so etc. So I feel this could be a shoe-in for yourself.
I'm not convinced that it would.
Kathy, what is today's, for once only on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, because normally it's a Midweek Drive Wednesday slot, what is today's particular clue?
Okay, it's a simple one, but it has me confused. So, four letters, and the clue is approximately. And I can tell you that the first letter starts with an O, and the last letter starts with is with an O.
Approximately.
Yes,
absolutely
approximately.
Absolutely hopeless for me, I'm afraid. These sort of things, I never get them.
There we are. He's denied everything right from the off, really.
I do have a second clue. If we can figure this out, we might be able to figure out the first clue.
Okay.
So, the phrase is cheer on, or cheer being the focus. And it's four letters. I have the last three letters, double O T. So we're missing the first letter, cheer on.
Cheer on.
No, but Kathy, that's an absolute nightmare for
me. I'm so sorry, Richard. I never meant to put you in this position.
No, but it was quite deliberate.
No, I missed yesterday. Yesterday was a busy day. We couldn't get it. So now we had to move it to Thursday.
Yeah, which just happened to coincide, Richard, with we switching yourself from 10:30 through to 9 a.m. You know, it's what happens. Okay. Nothing deliberate at all. Don't be so paranoid, Richard. This is only in one dimension. You should actually sort of press that button, get you through to Alta, and then, no. I won't keep being the cheerleader for everything everywhere.
Back to the awards, just to mention the extraordinary performance by Brendan Fraser, nominated for both Oscars and BAFTAs, in The Whale. I mean, this is just, just extraordinary, just amazing.
I'm so happy for Brendan Fraser. He deserves it.
After The Mummy.
Yeah.
And the whole sequence of The Mummy after, of course, George of the Jungle.
George of the Jungle, how could we not?
Exactly.
He's come so far.
Exactly. It shows the true joy of the profession of the thespian arts.
Well, someone paying a man weighing £600 who lectures and also is coming to the end of his life and knows it and wants closure with his daughter. It's an amazing experience. And so, I mean, The Whale didn't do particularly. I thought it might get the nominee for one of the nominations for Best Picture, and it didn't. But it is important just that it's mentioned there. That excellent, really, really excellent performance by Brendan Fraser. I just simply wouldn't have believed it. And also Hong Chau in The Whale too, as his long-suffering friend who helps him. Very good too, and a nominee for supporting actress. Also for the British interest, apart from Angela Riseborough, I mentioned before, with Bill Nye's remarkable performance in Living. I mean, a movie that really, really... Will it perhaps...
Could he win an Academy Award? I think not.
I think not, no, but it would be interesting if, for example, which film is going to win Outstanding British Film at the BAFTAs is really between The Banshees, and I think Living has a chance. Very difficult. I see The Swimmers, delighted to see The Swimmers, which we all, I think, thought was remarkable, is in Outstanding British Film too. So, you know, there's an amazing film. So different.
So, cut to the quick. Kathy, will you be watching the BAFTAs and the Oscars, either or neither?
Oh, that's a hard one. I mean, I do want to see it. I'm curious. I want to see how it unfolds. Mm. The question is, will I stop watching it midway out of annoyance?
Yeah. lack of Ricky Gervais, you see. This is the key thing. If they want to kind of resume True. Some audience figures, they should bring back the Gervais factor. That's my line, but...
Okay. I knew you'd say that, Alex.
Yeah, well, exactly. I like to maintain these scenarios. But normally, of course, we have that contest between Richard Fitzwilliams and Phil Leonis. Phil has sent me a postcard saying, wish you all the very best. That's all I've heard from him, really. So, you know, who knows what's happening to Phil Leonis these days. But we'll just have to wait and see whether he wishes to participate. When are the dates for the BAFTAs and the Oscars? When do people actually need to put in their diary? Well, that's something I shall ensure. I'm doing something completely different on those evenings.
Well, I hope they will in fact be tuning in. As far from memory, I think the BAFTAs is it the 19th of February? Mm. And the Oscars is the 12th of March, from memory, I think. I hope people will tune in. I think more people will tune in. I don't think it will get the audiences that it used to get, but then it's a very different situation.
Like life or our particular reality. Kathy, any other questions you'd like to put to Richard? Now you've got this opportunity before you head off into the wild blue yonder to actually quiz our royal expert extraordinaire, who clearly will be rooting, and I say that once again, rooting for Prince Andrew to make a triumphant return. I mean, he's lost his place at Buckingham Palace.
He truly has. But I really want to emphasize on the word rooting that you used. That was... very specific to our crossword clue, and you are correct. The answer was root.
Did you see why I slipped that in there?
It was nice. It was smooth. It was easy.
Thank you. Okay. Anyway, back to you, Kathy.
Yes. Richard Fitzwilliams, what are you doing this week? What's happening in the world of Richard?
Well, what's happening in my world, I'm noticing... friend tomorrow at the Army and Navy Club, which will be quite interesting, and more friends over the weekend, where I hope to see Tar again. I'm just planning.
Again? Oh, dear me.
No, I thought it was so remarkable, and the friends are also reseeing it, and it's starting to it's picking up well in the UK, and I that would be a treat if I managed that. Yes, regarding I've done a couple of interviews already this week about Andrew, but I suspect all these, you know, these are reports and rumours. If he were actually to challenge the reportedly $12 million pound settlement, but it may have been as low as $3 million, I have no idea. It's, we don't know, with Virginia Roberts Jaffe. She apparently is going to write her book.
Nice.
Now, whether or not she is going to include details about him in it, I
could Netflix adapt it as a series, do you think?
Why not? Netflix can do anything.
Who knows what they can do, but regarding Andrew and his hopes, I mean, frankly, there are two courts. His hopes are based on the fact that Virginia Roberts Jaffe had to have settled now with top U.S. attorney Alan Dershowitz, and she admitted she may have made a mistake in her accusations against him. But anyway, that has apparently been settled. It's because of that that Andrew apparently has some hopes, according again to these rumors and reports. Yeah. But he's first got that photograph taken in 2001. Where
it's a fake. It's fake news. I mean, we know this. Only in our reality, of course. Everything happens, everything all at once.
There's different versions of the truth.
I do think, with reference to Andrew, the court of public opinion will never forgive him for that interview.
But Richard, that means that there are going to be three empty seats at the coronation. I mean, no Meghan, no Harry. Harry's apparently going to be doing commentary duties because he'll obviously need to make some money when Meghan is reportedly distancing herself.
Hey, no shame. We all got to make that dough.
Exactly. And Meghan clearly realises that Harry, he's probably gone too far. You know.
He went too far, and it's interesting. I want to see another poll backing this because I've never seen someone lose 45 points. Before public opinion.
Well, even Boris Johnson. When King Charles released his book with Diana, I don't know what, because this was so long ago. What was the drop then in opinion?
The drop then in opinion would have been absolutely huge. I mean, it's an important point to make, actually, because Charles gave this disastrous interview where he admitted adultery, and that's where the drop would have occurred. The book, yes, no one read the book other than me. It's over 700 pages, and it's not well written. Jonathan Dimbleby was not a wise person to choose.
That's unfortunate.
I know his brother, David Dimbleby. Never actually met Jonathan. You know, David Dimbleby was one of my first interviewees. Oh, yeah, he's probably remembered, or not, as the case may be. And Kathy, are you part of the growing campaign in the United States of America who are saying, Meghan and Harry, go back to Britain?
No, I'm not part of that growing campaign. What is there? I didn't realize. Wow.
I think a substantial number of people surveyed have actually said they're sick and tired of the self-whining aspects, and it's time they went back to patch things up, went back to Britain. Yeah.
Here's the thing, though.
I think you've invented that.
No.
Look,
Richard, it's one of your channels, GB News. Just access the details there.
There's like a relatability between, you know, the British and the Americans right now, because I think we're just tired of hearing this completely consume our media. There's always a story about them. And I think after a while, even if you were indifferent about it, or maybe you were curious and you read a little bit, you hit a point where you're like, how does this actually affect me?
No. I mean, the coverage has just it was 6-7 weeks. So, you know, I take the point totally. But I'd like to see backup polls, which cement Newsnight figures, which were dropped for both of them. Mm.
Well, there we have it, you know, the undecided nation of the whole thing. I thought, Richard, you'd actually give a little mention to Princess Eugenie, who I think is just about announcing that another child is going to be born.
Shout out.
Some glorious news there, which is wonderful. Pity, again, her father, Prince Andrew, won't necessarily be part of that sequence. But I don't know, maybe. As I said, my solution, which I've been putting forward again and again, I think if Michelle Yeoh does actually win Academy Awards, it could pave the way for Andrew, Meghan, and Harry to actually take residence in Beijing, because they'd look after them in Beijing.
True. Yeah. I would recommend maybe Hong Kong.
Yeah, possibly. No, I think Beijing. Let's go, really. I could understand, you know, Andrew's naval background might not be necessarily suited for that particular aspect there. So I think Beijing, go in the heart of the matter. Sure. And I mean, you know, it's known in any case because of the number of listening devices that are put out in terms of refrigerators and all of
course,
systems,
of course.
Anyway, enough of such bizarre material, because otherwise we'll be accused of actually doing a Donald Trump on the Siren radio system. He's not coming on the show. mind you, we will have head chef Miguel Barclay and Bob Kerr talking about how you can actually cook economically and safely, which is very important, because cooking on an unsafe gas appliance can be lethal.
Terrifying.
We'll find out a bit more about that later. Richard, have you ever considered being a driving instructor?
I don't drive, Alex.
Oh, no. Have you ever considered being a driving instructor? Should that be a bar? Should that be a barrier in these open-ended words? The fact that you don't drive.
I mean, I think it's a valid point that he brings up.
Well, we'll be finding out that with psychologist Honey Lancaster James, and how opportunities for being a driving instructor may well be something you could consider, as opposed to quiet quitting, or indeed being part of the Great Resignation, which is so 2022. Frankly, it's untrue. So, Kathy, would you like to put those last two questions to our royal correspondent? And indeed, erstwhile fan of multidimensional movies. He liked the Avengers, you know. he followed through the whole Avengers Endgame scenario.
Sure.
And surely Everything Everywhere All at Once is simply that translated into a more human, superpowerless universe.
You're creating someone out of your own fantasies.
But we do appreciate the commitment. And yes, I would love to ask the last two questions. It's always a privilege and an honor. So here's my first question for you, Richard Fitzwilliams. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us today?
I have indeed.
And will you be joining us again?
I certainly will.
So let me give this dream to you.
so I could find my way. It's pretty much what it's all about, really, being a light to other folk as well on the feast of St. Timothy and St. Titus, Kathy. Just in case you were wondering.
Oh, I was wondering. Thank you.
I was going to say Happy Australia Day, but then I realised that there are many people in the Antipodes who say, but it's an invasion day. You're supporting this cultural decimation of colonisation and so on. So I kind of resisted. And I was tempted to meet up with Richard, but
sure.
I thought it would only trigger.
Think it's a day that it's important to, this is the time to educate yourself, read about it, understand what was happening with the Aboriginals really, you know, take the time to give them a little piece of mind. A little thought today.
Yeah.
Really consider it.
Yesterday, of course, Burns Night, the Feast of Robbie Burns. We did an extensive line on that. We spoke with Fia Vandenbogert, I should say, in Bulk. Her brother was also celebrating his birthday yesterday.
That's, oh, sweet.
That's Harm. So he'll obviously
happy birthday, Harm.
Exactly. Yeah. what else was happening yesterday? Oh, yes, you were graduating. That's it. Exactly. You see, all of those things happening on the same day. You've got Burns Night. You've got a Harm's birthday. You've got all the... the official feast day of the conversion of St. Paul, when he stopped being Saul and became Paul, obviously.
Right, the transformation.
Because he saw the light. Well, actually, the light actually...
saw him.
Exactly. So there we have it. And, of course, your graduation, for which, congratulations. Well done.
Thank
you. Therefore, and I'm sure I speak on behalf of Jessica, even though who knows where she's gone these days in Dublin.
Dublin's just taken her.
Yeah. Her official award for most valuable contributor would go to your good self, Kathy Manso.
Oh, so. That's sweet.
That's been done and dusted. I have therefore made that official now. And you're off to York now.
I'm off to York. I got things to see, places to go.
Have you been to York before?
Only that one time with you when we did the York Maze.
Which, yes, of course. Yes.
Yeah. I can't believe you forgot. It was a big deal.
2022. It seems like only yesterday.
So last year.
I don't remember it well. But yeah, so guys, well, enjoy York. That'll be a splendid scenario. Hopefully, again, we'll hear more Kathy Manso on location as the whole thing proceeds. Keep on keeping on. And in the words of David Soul, obviously savour the best days of your life.
You always said living with me was impossible. Try it, I said, just like the wind, I'm changeable. We ain't got money, but we sure got laughs and lots of love too. So I confess, on my behalf, you're giving me, honestly, the best days of my life. Whispering girls said, don't be a fool, don't give in to him. He's an animal, he'll treat you like dirt, and then he'll check you in. You two are not compatible. It'll never ever last. They said I wasn't even suitable, but you're giving me, honestly, best days of my life. She bothered with me at all. So stayed in my ways. Let's face it, my dear, I'm insufferable. Crazy nights spitting into days with all my noisy friends. But they all love you as much as I. Constantly, best days of my life. My dear, seems unthinkable. One night without you, more often than not, is unbearable. But if it all can't work out, one can never, never tell. In my heart, there is no doubt. Gave to me unselfishly the best days of my life.
It's coming around to 16 minutes to 10 o'clock, actually. Well, 30 seconds away from 16 minutes to 10 o'clock on Siren Radio, of course, and throughout Lincoln. You're listening to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition live. And still to come, we'll be speaking to Chef Miguel Barclay, as we mentioned, chef and a person who practices the whole notion of budget-based cooking. And very tasty budget-based cooking as well. So some interesting lines there. We've got Bob Kerr as well talking about gas safety. And Annabelle Knight will be talking the recent trends shown by a Love Honey survey across the UK. Plus, of course, we've got psychologist Honey Lancaster James who'll be chatting to us about that possible decision to maybe take a complete career switch and do something entirely different and maybe, just maybe, become your own boss.
I've been dreaming, friendly faces. I've got so much time to kill. Just imagine people laughing. I know someday we will. And even if it's far away, get me through another.
Okay, the department of you won't realise what you've lost until it's gone is very much the fore with this next item. And it is a little bit problematic that when it comes to the traditional bank in the high street, well, it may not be there for much longer. And what is the problem with respect to that, you might well say? Well, there are heaps of challenges, as we're about to find out as we speak to the Chief Customer Officer at Newcastle Building Society and indeed member of the High Street Task Force. That's the fabulous Stuart Miller. How are you, Stuart?
Hi, Alex. Really well, thank you.
Well, great to connect with you once again. Let's go straight to another question. Yeah. Banks and building societies, how many have actually disappeared from our high streets so far?
Well, unfortunately, in recent years, there's been over 5,000 bank branches closed, which, you know, has left a huge gap in the provision of cash and face-to-face financial services, we believe. But at Newcastle Building Society, we just felt that something had to change. So what we've been doing, Alex, is working with partners such as local authorities and local communities to share space and costs, of course, which has meant we've actually been opening branches. And what we've just launched there literally last week is a partnership with a tech company called OneBanks. And what this does is it allows customers of any bank to come into one of our branches or one of the pilot branches and pay in cash and withdraw cash. And that includes small businesses as well. So it will be really interesting to see how that goes.
I mean, these are really critical aspects. And I can speak from personal experience in terms of there's a mild irritation when you find that previous banking organisations, which were probably within walking distance, have now actually become, well, more, it's more 3 or 4 miles away. But equally, got to turn around and say, although, yes, perforce, sometimes one uses telephone banking, etc., it's can be very frustrating, can be highly irritating, depending on the quality of the line, the challenges you've actually got there, even with respect to online stuff. I mean, it's not a seamless transition. And I'm speaking of somebody who's reasonably tech savvy. So heaven only knows what somebody who's perhaps less able to actually cope with respect to what's required for web material, etc., is faced with. I mean, it could be a nightmare, I would have thought.
Absolutely. I mean, and don't get me wrong, you know, we're a big advocate of digital technology. We've got our own app. We've got a very active website and they play a really, really important part. But, you know, an app can't do everything. So whether it be buying your first home, thinking about planning for your retirement, maybe taking out a savings account, a lot of people just like to sit down with somebody and chat it through and, you know, give them the confidence speaking to an expert that they're making the right next move. As I say, you know, digital's fine, but they really can't do everything. And some people don't have access to the internet, and you know, some people don't have good access to transport to get, you know, what can be 10, 15, 20 miles to the nearest bank. So that's why we've been looking for innovative ways to open new branches. And most recently, you know, in towns that had actually lost their last bank.
And these are all clear sort of aspects. And we talk about it not necessarily being against digital, of course not. But, digital is a tool. It's a part of a portfolio of ways in which things can actually operate. And as you rightly say, there are many times where actually having that face-to-face appointment and face-to-face meeting is absolutely critical for one's mental health, let alone one's financial health.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, there's a real move that certainly our members tell us anyway, that there's, and I think it might have been COVID-related, but there seems to be a real move to localism. So people don't want to travel five, even if they can, don't necessarily want to travel 5-10 miles down the road. And they'd much rather do, you know, their business, their banking in their own local town. But, you know, I think one of the things that allows us to make this work, Alex, is that we have a very different sort of business model. So we're mutual. We're owned by our members. We're owned by our customers. So from our perspective, our customers say that they value branches, and they do. Footfall in our branches was up 28,000 last year. So despite, you know, a lot of commentary that people haven't returned after the pandemic, is absolutely not our experience. And I was in our brand new Knaresborough branch just the other day, and they're fully booked for customers opening new accounts for the next 2 weeks. So there's a lot of evidence that there's a lot of people still value that face-to-face help, support, and access to cash.
I recently saw a news story that effectively said that a bank that used to be known as the Midland Bank, I think we know what it used to be, what it is now, is actually looking to close up to 400 of its branches across the country. Is this a huge business opportunity for the Newcastle Building Society to actually say, look, you know, there's an opportunity here for people who do genuinely actually need to have that personal contact?
I think the short answer is yes. You know, if I mean, obviously, you know, but the banks will have their own business models and their own strategies, and it's not for me to criticise anything that they're doing. But absolutely, you know, if we've got a town like, as I say, our latest one in Knaresborough, North Yorkshire, had lost its last bank, and we've moved in there, and we've been massively embraced by the local community, And that branch is probably our fastest growing branch now. So I think the thing that really can make a difference for us, though, is we've reimagined really what a branch is by sharing space with the library. We share the costs. We also share each other's customers, which you know is a great advantage for us. But you know we put community rooms in our branches that we open those up and give free access to them to local community groups. So it's maybe not thinking about what branches were, but really thinking about what branches need to be in the future to make sure that they continue to be viable.
So looking at the future of branches in the 21st century, is this the future that actually those blended approaches, as you've described in towns and presumably, as say, urban areas as well as the rural areas, will be something which we'll be seeing more of?
I think it is. I know there's a number of other similar initiatives in the background being piloted, maybe slightly different to ours, but I do think the blueprint we've created, you know, there's no reason why something similar couldn't be applied right across the UK. It really comes down to, you know, having the will, the desire to do it. So, yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, this kind of partnership, shared spaces, and as I say, sharing customers, which has huge benefits for us, really, really could be the way forward.
Just out of interest, any thoughts about what other countries are actually doing? I mean, obviously, we're focusing very much here on Britain, but is this something which we're seeing in, you know, across Europe and indeed the Americas and so on?
Yes, it is. I mean, you know, there's no doubt running branches is an expensive thing. So, you know, it's understandable that banks will look at their cost model and see if there is opportunity to reduce costs. And obviously, one of the big expenses will be their branch network. So, and they'll be investing heavily in digital as well. But yes, it's a trend we're seeing across Europe, across the States. And that's why we're keen to use, you know, a combination of partnership and new technology to see whether we can just find a different model. I think if we can do that and it can be sustainable, commercially sustainable, then there's no reason why it can't thrive. You know, we can't see more of these in the future.
And for people who are wanting to find out more details, Stuart, about Island Newcastle Building Society or the High Street Task Force, where would you point them?
Well, I mean, if you're close to one, pop into one of our branches is probably the best thing to do.
Excellent answer. Glad you said that, as opposed to saying, just go online, isn't that correct?
Exactly. You'll get a very warm welcome and a nice cup of tea or coffee. So, but if you do want to find out more online, then it's newcastle.co.uk.
Excellent. Stuart Miller, Chief Customer Officer at Newcastle Building Society and, of course, member of the High Street Task Force. Huge thanks and keep on keeping on.
Thanks, Alex. Thank you.
Clash and Bank Robber on Siren Radio. And coming up on Siren Radio today, well, Thursday, of course, it brings you the joys of Lincoln Elevenses at 11 a.m., of course, an hour after we currently are as we approach 10 o'clock, as far as Siren Radio is actually concerned. That's hosted as ever by David Harding Price, and Elevenses will take you through to 1 o'clock, 1 p.m. Rhys Evitz will be joining us for the Thursday package. Siren Jukebox takes over at 3 until Chris Clarkson returns with Drive Time Muse at 5 through to 7, in which case it's Resonance Rewind, which will be looking this week at the classic Disney movie Tron from 1982. Really? All that long ago? Yes, Tron is the movie that's being disseminated and discussed with Jessica Burtis, Robin Pierce, Stephen Pierce, and yours truly. That's Resonance Rewind tonight at 7 o'clock. The Rock Train follows at 8, as ever, with a whole heap of tracks, none of which are too heavy. Kevin and Mark, of course, providing the Rock Train. And then the Cyber Den takes over at 10 o'clock until midnight, with, of course, Jake doing his usual digital magic, almost connecting, you might say, with Tron after a fashion.
Paint the night sky while the morning waits, with a field of stars to keep the dark at bay. Take your spotlight underneath the moon. Sometimes a miracle is all that can carry you. Oh, what are you dreaming of? Is it the kind of love that'll be there when the world is at its worst? That'll cover you in kisses unrehearsed. When you're losing ground, still tell you that you're worth all you're dreaming of. Shove the pain, birds, come and rest their wings upon your windowsill without a song to sing. Close your eyes and disappear inside. All that is beautiful was following behind. Oh, what are you dreaming of? Is it the kind of love that'll be the kind.
gas takes on a whole new meaning when we talk about the importance of actually being gas safe. And one of our regular features is obviously ensuring that you do actually make sure that your gas appliances and heaters are indeed checked properly. But what about that cooking side of things? Well, we're delighted to welcome two fabulous folk to actually talk about this particular aspect, and in particular, the whole joys of £1 meals, which sounds great. First of all, of course, from £1 meals, we've got Chef Miguel Barclay. How are you, Miguel?
Yeah, really good. Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Excellent. And also with respect to Gas Safe Register, we've also got the wonderful Bob Kerr. How are you, Bob?
Good morning, Alex. I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent. Okay, Miguel, let's turn to you first in terms of this particular thing, which actually does look as though in the cost of living crisis that we're constantly being faced with, etc., it could be a really wonderful way in which you can potentially feed a family for four for less than £1 per dish by simply actually cooking in a fuel-efficient way. Share with us, how does this magic work?
Yeah, so what I specialise in is making meals for a pound, but cost of living came around and then now specialised in also getting your fuel costs down. So not only do you have to think about what you're cooking, but you've got to think about how you're cooking it. So what I've done here is I've got a little three-course menu, and primarily I like to use the hob now. So by cooking quick and at a high heat, you end up saving a lot more energy than if you're going to cook low. Sort of if you're going to do like a pork shoulder in the oven, that could take sort of up to 5 hours. And that's going to sort of waste a lot of money for you. So just designed a menu that was sort of very, very quick and very easy to do.
I mean, this is the key thing, Bob, presumably, that people are more and more concerned about cooking economically. So presumably you would fully endorse what Miguel's just been talking about.
Absolutely, Alex. I think there's always that case where people can look out for signs where things are unsafe and making sure gas appliances are checked. So when people are doing these great meals and recipes that Miguel's produced, you know, we're asking people to look out for those safety signs around the hob in particular. The flames on the hob not being floppy and yellow, because that will be a problem. They should be blue and crisp. And if people do have an issue, then they can call in a gas safe registered engineer who's fully qualified to check it out.
Well, this is obviously critical, so I'll stay with you if we may, Bob, because you've addressed a couple of the issues there in terms of obviously we want to cook economically, but we want to cook safely as well from that point of view. Clearly, there is this sort of notion about concern in terms of the whole systems. Would you obviously stick to the usual line that we've talked about, the mantra that we should get our gas appliances checked by a recognised engineer at least on a once-a-year basis?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a recommendation from us that appliances should be safety checked at least once a year and by a qualified engineer who will come in from a local area and check that out for people. Never mess around with it yourself. Some people have a tendency to think they can look at it, but it's always better to get the qualified person in to do the job properly for you.
Miguel, this particular survey suggests that 40% of us don't feel confident about what are the cheapest and most energy efficient ways of preparing and cooking food at home. So again, presumably this material that you've prepared will at least give some pointers in the direction of the way in which you can actually cook safely, obviously, but also cheaply as well.
Yeah, 100%. Because people haven't traditionally cared, they sort of just gone around cooking whatever they want, however they want. But now that the cost of living crisis is sort of really sort of beginning to bite, people are now realizing, oh, I don't quite know what is the best way to cook or the cheapest way to cook. So yeah, it's just a lovely menu that we've put together. It's got all your tips in there. It's got the gas safety tips as well. And it's just a lovely sort of first step in the right direction. If you're not confident, just cook this little three-course meal, and the amount of stuff that you're going to learn just doing this will just set you in the right direction and get your brain thinking in the right way.
Now, you mentioned obviously the leg of lamb. What about any vegan or vegetarian folk who might be saying, we can't do that, we can't have a leg of lamb? Are there suitable vegetarian vegan options that you provided as well?
Well, if you want to do vegan, then one of the dishes has got feta cheese, and there's some lovely vegan versions of feta out there, so you can just swap that in. And then for the main course, we do a lovely chorizo, it's almost like a chorizo bolognese in a way. And what you can do is you can just swap that out for something like aubergine, And then you're going to want to get those paprika flavors in there. So surprise, surprise, you just add a little bit of paprika and you get pretty much the same dish. It's a little bit more similar to bacon, but it's still like a beautiful, beautiful dish to try.
Okay. Bob, have you tried any of these recipes out yourself that Miguel's been putting forward?
I haven't, to confess, Alex, I haven't yet, but I
do. You're too busy rescuing people's gas appliances, obviously.
And talking about this time of the morning as well, it's one of the things that make you hungry, doesn't it?
This is true. Okay, let's very briefly just go through some of those top concerns and indeed ways in which you can ensure that you can stay gas safe this winter. Would you like to just take us through them from the point of view of, again, that colour of the flame, not a lazy yellow one, needs to be a crisp blue one, and so on?
Yeah, absolutely. So look out for those signs for an unsafe gas appliance. It doesn't have to be just the hob. You know, we are trying to raise awareness for everyone around all of their appliances and making sure they're checked on an annual basis. So look for those signs staining around the appliance. Get a carbon monoxide alarm, because that will give you an early warning to get somebody in to check it out. And finally, you know, if you do have a problem, you need to turn your gas off. The gas safety valve, as it's become to known, is by the meter. Surprisingly, not a lot of people have told us they know that. So it's exactly by the meter, so you can turn it off and get the emergency services in if you need to. Also getting a gas safe engineer, as I mentioned, you can get one from our website, gassaferegister.co.uk, or by giving us a call on 0800 408 5500.
Fantastic. And Miguel, where would people go to find out more of your delicious recipes?
Instagram is probably the best place. So it's at Miguel Barclay. Or I've got 8 cookbooks out now. So you can go to the bookshop or Amazon and pick one up from there.
Excellent. Ace Chef Miguel Barclay and indeed Gas Safe Registers, Bob Kerr, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on and enjoy your eating, folks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Did you ever see starlight come rushing from the sky? Heading for home in a certain someone's eyes. Uh-huh. That's my baby. I'm talking about my baby and I love him. Walking miracle. He's a walking miracle. Ooh. Did you ever see sunshine come pouring out of space? Just to be part of that smile on someone's face. Uh-huh. That's my baby. I'm talking about my baby and I love him. He's a walking miracle.
Linny and the Family Cooking, A Walking Miracle. Meanwhile, back in the 1970s, and ahead of a feature on the nation's personal trends with respect to a recent Love Honey survey, it's Donna Summer.
Edinburgh, Belfast, Manchester, Cardiff, and Liverpool. Well, what do they have in common? Well, the key thing today is that they're all the top five cities where the most is spent on sexual wellness products in relation to their population. Okay, so what does this mean for the state of humanity in the British Isles today? Well, we're delighted to welcome Love Honey sex and relationship expert and author and general all-round super person, Annabelle Knight, to the programme. Annabelle, how are you?
Oh, that was a fantastic introduction. After that, I'm really well, thank you.
Okay, now, I mean, clearly you're a specialist when it comes to dating, body language, relationships, and so on and so forth. But in those immortal words of a group, I think, back in the 20th century, let's talk about sex. Do we still find it difficult to actually utter the S word and kind of get a little bit embarrassed and think, oh, I don't know what we're doing about this. You know, where are we going?
Absolutely. I mean, we are getting better at talking about sex and communicating our wants, needs and desires. But it's still thought that around about a third of us really struggle to talk about sex, even with our partners. So while we are doing better, there's still some room to go.
Now, clearly, the whole notion of variety being the spice of life is one aspect, but there are a whole continuum of people's experiences and lines within that. Does it all boil down to that C word, i.e. communication?
Yeah, do you know what? It absolutely does. I think the only way you can have, you know, a happy and healthy intimate life, with whether that's with yourself, partner or multiple partners, is by communicating those desires and those needs. And that sometimes is easier said than done. But I think for a lot of people, if they find that they can start the conversation, things will naturally flow.
So let's return to that top five sexiest cities list, of course, with Liverpool in fifth place, Cardiff in fourth, Manchester in third, Belfast in second. And I suppose good news for Nicola Sturgeon, Edinburgh in first. Is it the Sturgeon effect? Is that it?
Do you know, that's the only reason I can think of. It is definitely Nicola leading the way.
And I mean, in terms of obviously outlining that whole side of things there, obviously one might have thought, well, surely London will be there, but presumably Greater London actually has a key area. And does that kind of reveal anything again about our habits as a nation, et cetera? Because we see no sign of Lincoln, nor indeed Newark or Nottingham.
Well, actually, Lincoln does pop up on Love Honey's sex map as their favourite category being the magic wand, which was made famous in a very famous Sex and the City episode. So we are up there, and we were also the second sexiest county in terms of how much money we spent. So while, you know, quantity may not be at the forefront of the Lincolnshire mindset, quality certainly is. And we were only just behind Greater London.
Well, that's quite intriguing. I mean, obviously the magic wand, nothing to do with Harry Potter. So let's not go there.
Not this time.
No, indeed. So again, does this also reveal that people, as we said at the start, feel more comfortable talking about sex and so on, feel that actually we talk a great deal about wellness, well-being, healthy mind, healthy body and so on. Is this also a critical part of the whole human condition, really, Annabelle?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, sexual wellness is almost at a trend, but it isn't. It's really a mindset, and it's part of the self-care package that we should all kind of be dipping in and out of to really look after ourselves. And it's essentially feeling happy and healthy and contented with your sex life. And the wonderful thing about Love Honey is that you can do all of those things from the safety of your own home without feeling judged online, and you can spend as much time on the website as you like, as little time, and it's a really judgment-free zone where their only goal is to, you know, improve the quality of your sex life.
Now, clearly we are approaching that critical time. Many people will say very stressful time of the 14th of February, St. Lofacolia Day, now, of course, St. Valentine. Double pressure, I suppose, for people connected with your good self, Annabelle, because I think it's about a week or so after your birthday. So in terms of just stress personified on that basis. But what advice would you actually give folk who are sort of thinking, okay, what sort of things should we be putting into place? Should I be hiring in the long-stemmed roses now, or actually looking for various other sort of aspects, or should I just go for, well, we're going to go for good communication strategies on the day?
Do you know, I think that's a really good idea. I would strip it back this year. You know, the cost of living crisis, not everyone has hundreds of pounds to splash the cash on a fancy Valentine's Day. And while I do love the fact there is a day to recognise your partner and your love, I do think that, you know, that day should really be every day. But if we strip it back and if we take things back to basics, we can have not only a fantastic Valentine's Day, but we can also reconnect with our partner. So in my opinion, I think this Valentine's Day, let's take the pressure away. Let's get back to basics. Cook a meal at home. Rent a film. Look at me, I'm showing my age now. Nip down to Blockbuster. Get on, you know.
There is only on one Blockbuster streaming left in the world, and it's in America, so you'd have to fly over there to actually...
I've just been saying about cutting the cost on Valentine's Day, and here I am telling everyone to nip over to the States. No, really take things back to basics. Watch a film, cook a meal together, do something that promotes quality time, and I think you're going to have a really good Valentine's Day off the back of that.
There you have it. Annabelle Knight, fantastic to hear with your good self. Once again, though, how can people find out further details and information either about your good self or indeed the Love Honey Sex Map Survey?
Well, I am on social media, so just search for Annabelle Knight and I should pop right up. And if you are really interested in Love Honey and all the brilliant things they do, then head over to their website, which is lovehoney.co.uk.
Annabelle Knight, life coach, relationship counsellor, just generally Renaissance woman. Huge thanks. Take care and keep on keeping on.
Oh, thank you.
There's always someone.
Interestingly enough, the great resignation and quiet quitting, they seem terms which were so 2022, or are they? Certainly it does seem as though as we head into the end of January and obviously the rest of 2023, more and more of us want to be our own bosses. In fact, recent research from the AA Driving School has suggested that one in three British folk want to actually be their own boss. Why? Well, we're going to try and find out. And also some of the advantages of engaging in that self-determination with two fabulous souls. First of all, ace psychologist, general all-round wonder soul. That's Honey Lancaster-James. How are you, Honey?
I'm good, thank you, Alex. It's lovely to be back with you.
Likewise. And of course, we've also got the head of the AA Driving School Instructor Training Academy. That's Mark Bourne. How are you, Mark?
Good morning, Alex. I'm very good, thank you.
Excellent. I always feel a little loyalty with the AA because I've been a member for over 30 years. I know it's astounding, but what the heck. Anyway, that's by the by. We're not here to talk about my own sort of challenges. We are here, of course, to talk about this fascinating survey, Honey. I mean, are you surprised by this or is there something about this January time which New Year's resolutions are in place and we say, right, this is the time I'm going to actually be a self-determining individual?
Yeah, I think there is always a sort of reflection, isn't there, that we begin the new year, we reflect on what we've done over the past year, any changes we want to make in our life. And I think sometimes we do start thinking, right, this is going to be the year I'm going to make a change. And then coupled with, as you were saying, this idea of the great resignation and the quiet quitting, it's almost as if I think lots of us have got to a point where we've gone, actually, life is short. I really want to do what I want to do with my time. I want to be my own boss. As you said, I think the AA Driving School research actually showed one in five Brits want to become their own boss. But interestingly, nearly half of those people who responded said that they are keen to seek a new job, a new career or a promotion. So that's nearly half of us are kind of, you know, looking at our working lives and wanting to make changes. And then when you look at the data, it also showed that one in five people who are currently employed are intending to become their own boss. So it does seem like there's a real trend towards wanting to be self-determined, wanting that added autonomy that being your own boss gives you. And there are a number of different things that seem to be motivating that kind of career shift as well. So when you drill down into the research, 60% said that actually it's partly related to things like the cost of living crisis, where some, I think, are thinking, well, actually, maybe there's a limit on what I can earn in my current role. Perhaps I want to become my own boss, start my own business, that kind of thing, because they're trying to sort of improve their financial state. And two out of five Brits said, actually, at the moment, they are currently updating their CV, 38% actively applying for new jobs. So it does seem to be that we're in January, people are thinking about new year, new me, new goals, and they're ready to do something about it. So it's an exciting time, it seems, for the nation.
Clearly, it's one of those aspects which I constantly used to say to students, it's not the degree, it's what you do with the degree. And it's also a case of how we are prepared to put together that term career portfolio, which was very much in vogue a few years ago. The fact that we are likely to actually change and have a number of experiences, presumably through our lives.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's one of the great things, I suppose, about culture nowadays, where it is permissible to try things and make a change. And it doesn't matter how old you are. Many people decide, I've done this for years, but I'm just going to switch and do something completely different. I'm going to become my own boss. There is a real sense of sort of permission to do that at any time of life. And I think that's a good thing, because what we do know, of course, about our working life is it so relates to our mental health and well-being. With actually going back to the survey, a lot of people said, I think it was about 38%, said that if they're in a job that they're not happy with or they can't achieve their career goals, that really affects their mental health, and it can also have an impact on their family life. So I think it is important to think about taking your career down a path that feels right for you. And for many, it is about autonomy, being able to set your own working hours, work it around other commitments and things like that.
Well, let's turn to Mark at this particular stage, because certainly three words which might bring a cold sweat to the most hardened of driving instructors are the words Maureen Driving School. But you're probably too young to remember the essence of Maureen and a line from that. But what is it about being a driving school instructor that can possibly lead into somebody really fulfilling all of the potentials that Honey's been sharing with us there in terms of better all-round individuality and becoming their own boss?
Okay, I do remember Maureen, but I think she's probably an exception to learning to drive.
Well, that's good to hear, Mark,
rather than the rule.
Yeah, okay.
But certainly in terms of, becoming a driving instructor, we're talking about changing professions and things like that. There's lots and lots of transferable skills that somebody may already have within their profession that would be applicable. And it's not just about teaching or coaching skills. It's also about being able to manage your own time, understanding what your priorities are during the day, being able to manage things throughout your working week and really sort of planning ahead to make sure you've got plenty of business and your business is working for you. It's a great thing to be involved in terms of becoming a driving instructor. You know, you're learning new skills and things like that and bringing that all in. You have that autonomy to work when you want and pick and choose your hours to a certain extent. Obviously, you need to be there when your customers are also there. But it does give you an awful lot of flexibility in terms of how you manage your working week and your working life.
And in terms of training to become an instructor, what is the general pathway that people would actually need to do? I mean, is it a two-year course, a three-year course, a six-month course, a two-week course? What are the processes that are offered by the AA Driving School Instructor Training Academy?
So ultimately, you train and then you take your examinations with the DVSA. So there's three tests, a theory and hazard perception test, a driving ability test, and then a teaching ability test. Your actual training, your period, you have sort of a pre-trainee license period, which can be anything from 12 weeks up to 18 weeks. And that's where if you go through with the academy, you have two choices. You have a 50-hour one-to-one instructor training course where you're out with a driving instructor and you're working with them one-to-one. But we also, as well, we introduced a virtual reality instructor training course 2 years ago. And that actually brings you into a classroom, into a virtual reality environment, and you do an awful lot of your training actually in the virtual reality environment before then you apply that out into the car. Once you've gone through the training and you've passed a couple of your tests, you're then able to go out and teach real learners, charging for your services so you can recoup a little bit of your income. A little bit of your expenditure. And then, you're preparing for your final test. All in all, it probably takes somewhere between 6 and 9 months to go through the entire qualification process and get all the training and experience you need to be able to be confident to go out there from day one, and have a really sound business.
And presumably people are also prepared for stable cost of fuel, or is that a case of, well, that could massively impact in terms of the cost we'd have to work through? Do you think we actually got a certain amount of stability with respect to that, or is it a case of, oh, we'll just drive electric?
Well, certainly electric is becoming much, much more popular. And so I have a lot of trainee driving instructors at the moment for their trainee license section of their training. They're in automatic ICE vehicles, so petrol and diesel vehicles. With the idea that when they do qualify, they do want to have an electric vehicle for their business. So it's definitely electric is becoming more and more popular. And certainly, I think a lot of that is driven by the fluctuations in fuel prices.
Honey, talking about career portfolios, have you ever been tempted, or were you ever tempted to actually say, I'm a bit tired of being a psychologist, I want to become a driving instructor?
Well, it's funny you should say that, but I've actually always thought it looks like a great career option. I think you obviously, for those who are sort of confident in the car and patient, I always love career options that give you autonomy. And of course, you know, once you've got clients and things, you've got to organise your day. But for many, given how much the work-life balance matters to us, I think it's brilliant when you can have a job where you can go, actually, these are going to be the days that I'm going to work maybe longer, these are going to be the days I'm going to go and pick the kids up after work or whatever. I've always thought that kind of work life really works. So there's been a few times in my life where I've thought, gosh, I'm working long hours or I'm away a lot or whatever. I wish I could do something a bit closer to home. So I never thought about particularly driving instruction, but maybe I should have done. I don't know. Maybe I should have done. You'd have to ask my kids whether I would be any good at that.
you could combine a wonderful notion of actually analysing and actually diagnosing road rage before it ever happened, really. It could actually be good therapy from that side of things there.
You're right.
Mark, the other question for yourself, have you ever considered actually becoming a psychologist?
No, but it's interesting, actually. You spend an awful lot of time, obviously, working one-to-one with individuals as a driving instructor. And of course, they bring lots and lots of things into the car. And, you know, it can be quite interesting then, some of the conversations that do happen, as much as you want to try and keep it, obviously, on learning and things like that. But there's an awful lot of trust, naturally, that builds up. So, there's probably a few transferable skills there, I would have said.
It's quite rightly so. I'm sure we don't want to get into the territory of the driving school instructor who actually has to deal with prospective learners who are saying, my partner just doesn't understand me, honestly. It's just, there could be dangerous in all sorts of ways. So let's not go there. Mark, how can people find out further information about becoming part of the AA Driving School Instructor Training Academy?
So if you head over to our website, so the AA/driving school, and then all of the information is there on the website.
And Honey, how can people follow your fantastic work as an ace psychologist in the world today?
Oh, that you can find me in all the usual places, Alex, you know, on Instagram. I'm psychologist_honey. On Twitter, I'm @HoneyLJames. But there aren't many psychologists in the world called Honey. So I always say to people, you can just search me out. Always good to hear from people.
Absolutely. And just to confirm, no connection whatsoever with the forthcoming Winnie the Pooh movie, Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey, which is another thing which we'll talk about in times to come. For the moment, Honey Lancaster James, ace psychologist, of course, and Mark Bourne, head of the AA Driving School Instructor Training Academy. Huge thanks. And may your driving experiences always be pleasant ones.
Thanks for having us, Alex.
Thank you, Alex.
not the most advisable thing to do, unless you're in a driverless car, of course, driving with your eyes closed. Don Henley. It's the Midweek Drive Morning Edition live. Last one of January 2023. Who'd have thought it, eh? Never mind. Up next, we'll reveal the most valuable contributor to the programme today. Of course, so is the late David Cassidy with his interpretation of January, which obviously we play whilst it's still January. Again, let's have a look at the show today in case you wish to actually find out what you might have missed. Well, we launched, of course, with Richard Fitzwilliams with his thoughts on the BAFTA and Academy Award shortlists. Kathy Manso regaled us with her experience of being a fully fledged graduate of the University of Lincoln at the fantastic ceremony yesterday. And, of course, she gave a fantastic speech as well, which you can see by going to YouTube and typing in University of Lincoln, and you find the details there. We also had Chef, although he is a chief in his own way, Miguel Barclay and Bob Kerr talking about how you can cook economically and indeed safely with a gas oven. TV relationship expert Annabelle Knight pointed out why Edinburgh was number one in the list of a recent Love Honey survey, but Lincoln didn't do that badly in terms of its experiences and so on. And we moved over dexterously, of course, to Stuart Miller, who really pleaded for the High Street Bank to return and gave some thoughts and suggestions in terms of how we won't lose our High Street Bank forevermore, all being well, the human contact being vital to mental well-being as well. Honey Lancaster, James and Mark Bourne, of course, talked about the notion of a career change in January, doing something completely different, and you'll be able to actually listen to all those again if you download the podcast in about an hour or so from now. Don't forget, as far as Siren Radio is actually concerned, up next we have David Harding Price with Elevenses, then it's Reese Evans at 1 o'clock, then the Siren Jukebox, then Chris Clarkson with Drive Time Muse, Residence Rewind at 7 and The Rock Train at 8, followed by The Cyber Den at 10, strangely enough. Okay, so the announcement that I need to make, because Jessica is otherwise engaged in Dublin, in terms of who has actually won the Midweek Drive Morning Edition Live's Most Valuable Contributor, well, I think it was a shoo-in, wasn't it, right from the start? Cathy Manso. Well done, Cathy. And that's it. We're pretty much out of here now. I will see you all, being well, in February for a Midweek Drive Live on Wednesday.